Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhaktivedanta ki, Kalantara, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Goprem Anandi. Okay. So,
is people done oral presentations or?
Because I've got hardly any results from Merle or from. Okay. And I haven't got all the essays either, so not a lot of essays. So maybe sending a message out to see what's going on. If you want to. Okay, so tonight we'll continue with chapter 18 of Canto 10. So, what was chapter 16 and 17? Is it? Krishna chastises Kaliya, and then the history of Kaliya. So, we hear about the pastime of Kaliya, what Kaliya represents. An interesting pastime. The danger of committing offences to devotees, all these things are discussed. So tonight we go into the 18th chapter. Now, from the 15th chapter, Krishna enters into Paulganda Leela. So Paulganda Leela means that Krishna has entered into a more mature age. And because he's in this more mature age, then his body changes and his mood, his mentality changes, and he begins to attract different types of relationships in Vrindavan, and especially begins to attract the relationships with the gopis, which will actually manifest in three or four chapters. We'll see Krishna actually begin to associate with the gopis. So Krishna is going into his youth, and tonight's chapter is called Well, Balaram slays the demon Pralamba. So we'll go through the first 16 verses tonight. The first 16 verses are really just a meditation on Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his complete absorption was in Brajras, or in the mood of absorbing oneself in Vrindavan. That is Mahaprabhu's mood, because Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahiyanya, that Lord Chaitanya is the combined form of Radha and Krishna. So Krishna wanting to experience from the position of Ashraya. These two points need to be understood. One is called Ashraya, one is called Vishaya. Ashraya means like ashram. Ashram means like your place of shelter. So Ashraya means the abode of love, the shelter of love. That's the devotee. The devotee is the shelter of love, or the abode of the love is in the heart, devotee's heart. Krishna is the Vishaya. Vishaya means the sense object, or the recipient of the love. The devotee's love is in the heart, and Krishna is the object of the love. So the love from the devotee's heart naturally manifests and goes towards Krishna. So, because Krishna wants to experience that mood of the residents of Vrindavan, particularly Srimati Radharani, who is the topmost resident of Vrindavan. She hasn't even been mentioned yet. Only indirectly, kind of in the previous. She's indirectly hinted at, but not directly yet. So Srimati Radharani, wanting to experience her mood, then Krishna takes that position. He becomes the Ashraya. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Chaitanya Charitamrita is a commentary on the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is a commentary on the Gita. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam explains, okay, what did Krishna mean in the Gita? And Chaitanya Charitamrita explains what did Krishna want to experience beyond Vrindavan, or even more in Vrindavan, or what could he not experience in Vrindavan? That is Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's called Parishishta Lila. Parishishta Lila means like when you read a book, at the end of the book there will be an epilogue or a afterword or a conclusion. So then it is like the final teaching or something more to be added to make the book more whole or understood. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is like whatever is in the Bhagavatam that Krishna wants to take further, or understand further, or experience further, that is Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that Krishna stole from Radharani her dhyuti and her bhav. Bhav means her emotions, her feelings. He took the feeling of Radharani in the mood of Ashraya, in the mood of the devotee, and he took the dhyuti, means the complexion. Because when Krishna related to Srimati Radharani that I want to experience what you experience, then she said, you can do that, but your body will go through all sorts of transformations. And going through those transformations, your body may become harmed, and I cannot tolerate that. You will roll on the ground, you will crash to the ground. It mentions in Chaitanya Charitamrita in Mahaprabhu's book, when Lord Chaitanya was dancing in Kirtan, he would sometimes leap and crash to the ground so heavily, the devotees thought every bone in the body must have broken. And then he would get up and he would continue to dance. So this is the mood of Krishna. He takes the complexion of Radharani. Radharani, she said, if you're going to take my mood, I will give you my complexion. In other words, she covered his body with her body to protect. So that whenever Krishna would fall or Lord Chaitanya would experience something, Radharani was protecting in the mood of that she wanted to take the any difficulty which is there, which is the mood of pure devotion or prema bhakti, amala bhakti. So Mahaprabhu, he wants to experience the mood of the ashraya. So we're hearing about the ashraya and the vishaya. So now, tonight, we're going into Vrindavan. The first half of the chapter is just a darshan of Vrindavan. It's a meditation. Because Lord Chaitanya has taught us the goal of Krishna consciousness is to meditate upon Krishna in Vrindavan. That was Lord Chaitanya's mood. His abhimana. He was internally, he was absorbed in the mood of a bridge basi. As soon as he took sannyas, the first thing he said, now I will go to Vrindavan. And then a voice came from the sky and said, no, it is not time yet. And then he changed his course. So that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. He wants to go to Vrindavan. So tonight we hear it like a description of Vrindavan. It's a meditation. This is what Lord Chaitanya is meditating upon. This is what Srila Prabhupada is meditating upon. Srila Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, 1968, very early in the movement. Srila Prabhupada says, you think I am in Vrindavan? Sorry, you think I'm in Los Angeles? Actually, I'm in Vrindavan. So, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan all the time, in consciousness. After the morning program here in Melbourne, he used to go up here in his room. He would be up there by himself, and devotees somewhere outside or down here, they could hear Prabhupada up there playing the harmonium to himself and chanting the prayers of the six Goswamis. So he was absorbed in his mood in Vrindavan. That was Prabhupada's internal bhajan. Even though externally he would not discuss it so often. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the same. Our guru was the same. Our spiritual masters. All the acharyas are the same. So now you have an opportunity to hear about Vrindavan in such a way that you can meditate upon Vrindavan. That's the point. So there's not many purports, same as the last chapter, not many purports. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has commented. So we'll take Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. And hearing his commentary, we will understand we'll enter more deeply each verse so that we can understand the mood of Vrindavan. So it's a meditation. We're meant to meditate on this. So that while performing your devotional service, your mind thinks of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada says that, or Rupa Goswami actually says that, externally you will be doing your devotional service, but internally the devotees should remain in the mind always in Vrindavan.
That is meant to be our consciousness. Externally, we do so many things in service to ISKCON, to push on the preaching movement. But internally, we're meant to be meditating on Vrindavan. That's the rahasya, or the sara, which means the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So tonight we'll begin chapter 18. And then next Monday, we'll finish chapter 18. Then we'll hear about Pralamba. We won't hear about Pralamba tonight. He will come. Pralamba's interesting. Interesting deity.
Shukadev Goswami said, surrounded by his blissful companions who constantly chant his glories, Sri Krishna then entered the village of Braj, which was decorated with herds of cows.
So what are the essential points in this verse? What is that?
Constantly chanted the glories.
Okay, yeah. So it's interesting because in this verse you can say there's no poet for it, so there's not very much in it. But if you analyze the verse word by word, practically there's unlimited meaning within this one verse. We could speak for an entire class just on this one verse. So what are some of the points there in that verse? We should always be hearing and chanting. What else is there? What's that?
Decorated.
What were the cows?
Decorated with cows.
Decorated with cows. Very good, yeah. Vrindavan is decorated with cows. Anything else?
Surrounded.
Surrounding.
So
it's
implied he's the center.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah, so surrounded by his blissful companions. Everyone in Vrindavan is
blissful.
Hands up if you are blissful. One, two. What about everyone else? Everyone not blissful? You should be. What was the point of being in this movement if you're not blissful? You might as well go and join something else. If you're in this movement, you should be blissful. There's no excuses. This is the movement of bliss. That's all that's in this movement is bliss. No. Prabhupada said his purports are his ecstasies. So Srila Prabhupada was writing his Bhaktivedanta purports. He said, these are my ecstasies. Prabhupada wrote some of the purports just there in that room. On the Bhagavatam. Where is he up to? 75 last time he came. He would have been up to... Where's that to 75? Like kind of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, that period. So he would have written something. Dictated sort of just up here, just above us in this room. So this was Prabhupada's ecstasy. Prabhupada was always blissful, always ecstatic. We should always be like that. That is the spiritual platform. And Prabhupada explains, Krishna is Satchit Ananda Vigraha. He is always blissful. We are also Satchit Ananda Vigraha. We are also blissful. We're full of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. That should be our constitutional position. Devotees should just always feel ecstatic internally. Externally, he can be very grave. Prabhupada was very grave, but internally, he was blissful, engaged in Krishna. So Krishna is just surrounded by blissful devotees. Krishna doesn't want miserable devotees. If you want to be miserable, you stay here in Elmore Park. But if you want to be blissful, you have to go to Goloka Vrindavan. It's up to you. If you want to stay away from Krishna, that's okay. Krishna can facilitate that. That's what he's doing right now. We're devotees, but he's facilitating our independence. So if you want that, if you want to be miserable, or if you don't want to be ecstatic, then stay here. But if you want to be blissful, go and be with Krishna. Krishna will only have blissful devotees around him. So we have to be in that consciousness. Devotees should feel like that. So, who constantly chant his glories. Prabhupada says in the very first purport of Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 1, Prabhupada said, it is the natural psychology of anyone, they like to hear others speaking about them. Hands up if you like to hear others speaking about you. 1, 2, 3. 3? Okay, good. I think these three have the most realization. Because everyone's thinking, everyone's intellectually thinking, well, I don't want to hear others speaking about me, so I won't put my hand up because I'm meant to be humble. But if you're honest, actually we do like other people speaking about us. It makes you smile. What's that?
Good about us.
Yeah, okay, good. So speaking about us. Okay, we'll ask the question again. Hands up if you like people speaking good things about you. That's naturally what I was implying. Yeah, so. Devotees, people naturally like that. It's a natural psychology. Even though you don't put your hand up, you still like it. Which is evident by the smile on your face. We like it. We like to hear others. So Prabhupada says, why are we like that? Because Krishna is like that. And we are simply created in the image of Krishna. Krishna likes to have others speak. So he likes to hear everyone glorifying him. And what does everyone do? They glorify him. Now, of course, with him it's very easy because he is Krishna. Right? He just killed Kaliya. Right? So you imagine, right, if there was a snake which was as high as the roof, you know, with 1,000 horns, and it was about to, you know, just smash through that wall right now, and then suddenly a blue boy comes in and kills it, right? Then what would you start saying? Yeah, we'd be jumping all over the place, you know? All glories to this blue boy, all glories to this blue boy. That's what they do in Vrindavan. All glories to Shama Sundara, all glories to Shama Sundara. Shama Sundara Ji Ki Jai. That's what they do. Why? It's easy, because he does everything like that. So of course you're going to glorify him. You know? We feel disappointed people don't glorify us more, but then what do? We fill out tax forms or... You know, we do all sorts of heroic activities. You know, we roll japatis. You know, glories to your japatis. You know, we do so many things. We take rest for too long. You know, all glories to your sleeping too much. You know, we do so many things. But what does Krishna do? He does things which are actually worth glorifying. That's why it's easy. But he likes it. He likes to hear it. Because everyone, it's natural. But for him, everyone does it all the time. It says here, the cowboys are all around him, and everyone's going back into Vrindavan, they're just singing all about him. It's easy because everything he does is wonderful. Everything he does is extraordinary. Who else can kill a snake that's that big? Okay, other people can do it, but can they dance while they're doing it? Right? Can they dance more beautifully than all the demigods while they're doing it? No one else can do that. So therefore he is the most extraordinary person. So Sri Krishna then entered the village of Braj, which was decorated with herds of cows. So Vrindavan is called Gokul or Goloka. Generally in our philosophy is based upon the writings of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Now, what was the first book, or what was the perennial book, or like the first book of the Goswamis' writings, which it is said all of the other teachings are based upon? Which one? Because they wrote many books. But. I can't remember. No, that's not considered to be like the first of them. But one of them is considered to be like the... It's perennial. Yeah, it's considered to be the one they base all the other teachings on. Right? The Brihad Bhagavatam Rita by Sanatana Goswami. So that is said to be the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it says in the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita that in the spiritual world, generally called the spiritual world Goloka Vrindavan, and when Vrindavan appears in this material world, we generally call that Gokula Vrindavan. Now, what's the interesting connection between those two names, or relationship between those two names? Cows. Yeah. So Krishna calls his whole planet Cow Planet, or Cow Place. Goloka, literally, Loka means a place, a planet, like that. So he literally names his entire abode after cows. This shows how important cows are to Krishna.
And then he calls the other place, this in this world, Gokula, which means the same thing, practically. Gokul means like a place of the cows. So it is Gokul or Goloka, Vrindavan. So that is his abode. He enters into his village. What is special about his village? It's a place for all the cows. They're Vaishyas. Because when Krishna comes to earth, he can do anything he wants. In the spiritual world, he can do anything he wants. He can choose any vana he wants. He can be Shudra. He can be Vaishya. He can be Kshatriya. He can be Brahmana. Right? When he comes as Mahaprabhu, he appears as Brahmana. Right? When he's a Mathuran Dwarka, he appears as Kshatriya. But in his most intimate form, he appears as Vaishya. Right? He's a cowherd boy. Right? He's just playing around in the field with cows in the forest. And it's interesting because if you read the Mahabharata, who was the father of the Pandavas? Pandu Maharaj, right? So Pandu Maharaj, he conquered the whole of India, which Yudhishthira did in the future. So he was the emperor, which is the topmost king. He was the king of all the other kings in India. He was the king of the earth at that time. But after he conquered everything, you read in the Mahabharata, he then left. He left the kingdom, Hastinapur, in the care of the Brahmanas. He said, "You rule the government. I'm going to go to the forest. Yeah, I've conquered everything. It's all under control. Now you run it. I'll go and live in the forest. And if you need anything, send a message. I'll come back." No? But he preferred to live in the forest, not in the city. And it's interesting because in Krishna's pastimes, he lives in the forest. He doesn't even wear shoes. Right? Everyone in the city wears shoes. In Dwarka, Mathura, everyone wears chappal, shoes. But Krishna doesn't wear shoes. He just goes barefoot. This is God. This is how he chooses to be. Lives in a forest with cows and just goes barefoot all the time. And goes back to his village, which is just a cowherd place. And it describes Nanda Maharaj's capital. What is the name of Nanda Maharaj's capital? Nandagaon. Or Nandagram, which means village of Nanda Maharaj. It's also Nandishwara. It's a hill. If you go to Vrindavan, I think many of you would have been to Nandagram. You've been to Nandagram?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like one hill, Nandishwara. So it is incarnation of Lord Shiva. And then it describes on top of the hill there's a palace, and the palace has many courtyards and open walls. So it's a very beautiful place. Everything's very open in Vrindavan. The birds can fly in, they can fly out. There's trees growing in the middle of the palace. They have courtyards. It's very like naturally, aesthetically pleasing and natural. It's very natural. And it's not like here, you know, we live in these little concrete houses. You know, some people don't even have trees. You know, but if you go there, it's all very natural, very beautiful. You can walk out and there's huge patios and balconies like that and towers, and it's most attractive. So that's Krishna's home. He lives in a very natural setting. So, any points from this first verse?
I have a question.
Yeah.
There is the cowherd boys and everybody in Vrindavan is an associate of Krishna's and has been born. Do the cows have that same kind of identity but are just born cows, or are they different?
What do you mean?
So, you know, it must have been a great devotee to be born as, you know, a friend of Krishna.
There's different types of devotees. One's called Nityasiddha. Nityasiddha, Nitya means always. So in the spiritual world there is no birth or death. So if you're a cow, you're a cow for eternity. And if you're a cowherd boy, you're a cowherd boy for eternity. Here then, you know, the suddenness of the devotees. So some of the devotees, they're like becoming pure devotees. So they take birth as cows in the material world, all like that, and associate with Krishna in his pastimes. But in the spiritual world, all the cows are eternal. The material world and the spiritual world are different.
I'm talking about the material world or the history of this.
Yeah, so you take birth according to what your swabhav is, what your nature is.
So the cows are always cows, even in the material world?
Sure. or they become perfect cows and they go back to the spiritual world.
Could they have been in human form and come incarnated as cows here for some purpose?
Yeah, as a sadhaka, means that right now in ISKCON, everyone's here is becoming a pure devotee. So if you become a pure devotee, then your next life you may take birth as a cow, if that's your constitutional position. The acharyas describe, after this life, if you become very advanced, you go to the universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes now, and you get the final training, and then you go back to the spiritual world. So if you're meant to be a cow, you go to that place and you're associated with the cows.
And then you stay a cow?
If that's your eternal nature.
In that Krishna's universe. If it's not your eternal nature?
You're going to the universe as whatever your eternal nature is meant to be. Whatever you're meant to be, then that's what you'll take birth as. And you'll get trained in that position to go. But generally, it is mentioned that devotees take human forms, gopis or gopas, usually. Cows possible, but it's usually a gopi or a gopa. Any other point? Okay. While Krishna and Balaram were thus enjoying life in Vrindavan in the guise of ordinary cowherd boys, the summer season gradually appeared. This season is not very pleasing to embodied souls.
In volume 1, chapter 18 of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. The summer season in India is not very much welcome because of the excessive heat. But in Vrindavan, everyone was pleased because summer there appeared just like spring.
Any points there?
The name suggests that there is no tapa traya, threefold disease on earth. Which also means that there is no adhidaivik.
Any other points?
Could be like, because Krishna is there, it doesn't matter what kind of situation is the man happening. Like the summer, it doesn't really bother much the habitants of Vrindavan because Krishna is there. Or?
Yeah, well, it's the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is. But yeah, because Krishna is there and because it's his energy, his internal energy, it's always pleasant. So everything is pleasant there. It means summer is pleasant. It's not hot and scorching. Like if you go to India now, it's very hot, quite scorching. The temperatures go right up, 40 degrees plus, and it becomes intolerable, unbearable. It's not like that in the spiritual world. There's summer, but it's very pleasant. And winter is also pleasant, and so is spring, and all six seasons are very pleasant. So, one time the devotee asked Prabhupada, is there snow in the spiritual world? And what did Prabhupada say? Yeah, he said, yes, but it is warm. So there's snow there, but it's warm. So, that's the spiritual world. The spiritual world means everything is pleasant. Nothing is unpleasant in the spiritual world. It's perfect. So it says here that the waterfalls are always gushing, and when the waterfalls gush, then there's a mist which comes on, and then that mist blows and it mixes with the pollen or the fragrance of the flowers, and that pollinated fragrant water mist, like a mist that just touches everyone's skin. You know when that happens sometimes? You get like some mist of water when it's hot. It feels very cooling and soothing. That's what it's like in the spiritual world all the time. Krishna just arranges. It's like this fine mist just comes through the air all the time in the summer season. Just to make everyone cool and satisfied. And it's fragrant.
So it's beyond imagination how pleasant it is there and how sensually satisfying it is there. So it says that in Radha Kund in particular, which is the most intimate place and the most wonderful place of Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world, it said that surrounding Radha Kund and the six directions are the six seasonal forests. So the devotees can choose at any time which season they want to go to. So Radharani can say to Krishna, I feel like enjoying summer. And Krishna says, okay, we'll go over to summer. So they go off into the summer forest. Or she says, I want to go to the winter forest. So they go off into the winter forest. Or the spring forest, or the autumn forest, or the monsoon forest. So whichever season they want, it is there, manifest. And it's always pleasant. It just that each one has a different flavor or a different type of attraction. So everything there is just for Krishna's satisfaction. Whereas in the material world, it just never works out. Just when you think you're having a really good day, something... yeah, you go to the snow or something. You know, and then... Yeah, you go to the snow. It's like lots of...
Or the sun comes out and melts the snow.
Yeah, something happens.
Yeah.
Something happens. You know, the snow season now in Victoria, you know, everyone goes, snow is a lot of fun. We used to go with my kids. Go skiing and everything, a lot of fun, but something always wrecks it.
Yeah.
There's always something, it's just the material world, just guaranteed. Yeah. Or like some friends I know a few years ago, they flew to Cairns for a holiday, you know, saved up all the money, went to Cairns, got on the beach, and then there was a plague of marsh flies. Oh. And marsh flies are the big flies we have in Australia that sting when they bite. So no one could sit on the beach. So it wrecked their whole holiday. Oh, I know some other friends, they told me on the weekend they went to Bali for a holiday. I said, how was it? They said, oh, it rained for a whole week. That's the material world. It's like that. You go to have pleasure, but it does not work like that. And the spiritual world is exactly the opposite. Everything is always perfectly pleasant and satisfying at every moment for the pleasure of Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees. So once again, the choice is ours. What do you want? Albert Park or Goloka Vrindavan? So that's our choice. We keep choosing Albert Park. So we keep getting born in the material world. Nevertheless, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally staying in Vrindavan along with Balaram, summer manifested the qualities of spring. Such are the features of the land of Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, the loud sound of waterfalls covered the cricket's noise, and clusters of trees constantly moistened by spray from those waterfalls beautified the entire area. Mitesh Prabhu, you like to read the purport?
This and the following three verses describe how Vrindavan manifested the features of spring even during the summer season.
Any points there? So it describes in Vrindavan, specifically at Govardhan Hill, the waterfalls come, and it says behind the waterfall there are caves. So Krishna can go with his friends, and then they can walk behind the water, and then there's a cave there. It's just the whole place is perfect. It could not be more well designed. Well, they can swim, and as they're swimming, they can go under the waterfall and come up, and there's a cave there, and they can have intimate pastimes or secret pastimes. Just like when you're a kid, you want to have fun, you don't want your parents around, right? Your children don't want you around, they want to enjoy themselves. Just look on Facebook, you'll see what they're doing. So they don't want their parents around. So Krishna goes to enjoy with his gopas, his friends, his gopis, his girlfriends. And they go off in the forest. They go and enjoy. So everything is there to facilitate their enjoyment. So they can have unlimited pleasure. So it's intimate. The forest is intimate. That's why they go into the forest every day. Because in the forest you can hide. And you can enjoy yourself. No one can see you. And it says in this section, because... it says this pastime is in summer. So the trees are huge in Vrindavan, big trees. It's like today I was driving past the St. Kilda Town Hall. You see out the front, there's that fig tree, the big one, you might have noticed. You just look when you go there. That's one of the most beautiful trees. It's my favorite type of tree. You know, you can climb right up in those trees, you know. Huge tree. So Vrindavan is full of those kind of trees. Huge trees, and because they're so high, even though it's hot in summer, but everything is cool and shady. So they just wander around under the trees. It's like being in a continuous, like, cave. They can just enjoy their pastimes. And they can go and hide and have adventures. And it says in Bandiravan, which is on the other side of the Jamuna, from Govardhan Hill and Vrindavan, on the other side, there's a forest called Bandiravan. There's five forests on that side and seven forests on the other side. So it says in Bandiravan, there's one banyan tree. So the banyan trees grow up and down. And it says it goes for like a yojana. Yojana means like 8 miles. So the boys, they just wander through. It says the king of the banyan trees. It's like having like all tunnels and caves they can play in. So you can imagine how pleasant and how much fun it would be. Would you like to go to Vrindavan? No? It sounds attractive. Does it sound attractive? Do you like the sound of it? Sounds good. Not bad. So you have to absorb your mind and your consciousness in these descriptions. Right? Absorb your mind and your heart. And you get to the point, Prabhupada says, when you're chanting, that all this comes into your consciousness. And the desire comes to go there and to live there and to be there. Not to be separate from Krishna, but to be with Krishna. That's why we're reading this. Because it's meant to be stirring up desires in your heart. Right? Those desires aren't being stirred up, then get more serious about the whole thing. Because we're meant to be becoming attracted to Vrindavan. The wind wafting over the waves of the lakes and flowing rivers carried away the pollen of many varieties of lotuses and water lilies, and then cooled the entire Vrindavan area. Thus the residents there did not suffer from the heat generated by the blazing summer sun and seasonal forest fires. Indeed, Vrindavan was abundant with fresh green grass. With their flowing waves and deep rivers drenched, with their flowing waves, the deep rivers drenched their banks, making them damp and muddy. Thus the rays of the sun, which were as fierce as poison, could not evaporate the earth's sap or parch its green grass. Flowers beautifully decorated the forest of Vrindavan, and many varieties of animals and birds filled it with sound. The peacocks and bees sang, and the cuckoos and cranes cooed. Intending to engage in pastimes, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, accompanied by Lord Balaram and surrounded by the cowherd boys and the cows, entered the forest of Vrindavan as he played his flute. So are there any points there which are interesting? Nothing that interests you?
Playing
his flute.
That they're all together, that he's playing his flute.
Very good. So he's playing his flute. Okay. So, if you study the science of devotion, it's called the Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. It is said of all the books of the Goswamis, that is the most important book. That's the one the Prabhupada translated as the Nectar of Devotion. That's the commentary in English on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So if you study, there are different types of bhavas. What are the different types of bhavas? Has anyone studied that? The science of devotion. So there's the prominent bhava, which is called what? Stayabhava, right? And then what comes from Stayabhava? Called Anubhava. Anubhava means, Anu means to follow. Stahibhav means your permanent ecstasy. So say you're a cowherd boy. Your stahibhav means your relationship with Krishna. You always feel like he's your sakha friend. That's your sthahiva, permanent ecstasy, or your permanent relationship. From that comes an anubhav. Anubhav means it makes you feel ecstatic, and then bhavas and ecstasies, they rise. And sometimes you dance and you chant and you sing. These are called anubhavs. Right? And then comes sattvika bhav. Sattvika bhavs means sattva. Sattvika means the eight ecstasies or involuntary symptoms which come. Your hairs stand on end. Krishna's my friend. Your hairs stand on end. Your tears come from your eyes. Ramancha kampashru taranga bhajo. Says the spiritual master feels these ecstasies. Where the tears come. Krishna's cowboy boys. They see Krishna is my friend. Tears come. They tremble and hairs stand on end. Then comes the vibhavs. So the vibhavs means the next level or next waves of ecstasy which come from feeling that Krishna is my friend. And then vyabhichari bhavs or sanchari bhavs. That means different things which erupt or manifest. It means sanchari bhava, that means different ecstasies that take place in the pastime. Like in the previous chapter, when the cowherd boy saw Krishna with Kaliya and that his life was in danger, anxiety just went all through their personality. And that is called like a sanchari bhava. That means like a wave comes up in the ocean, the bhakti vasamrita sindhu, the ocean of devotion. A wave comes up and it makes them feel like a whole intensity in their relationship with Krishna. So Krishna is their friend, right? And they dance and sing, say, Krishna is my friend, their hairs stand on end. But when they sing with Kaliya, right, then the feeling of friendship just becomes even more intense. My friend is maybe going to die. And they just become overwhelmed by the ecstasy of anxiety, of love for Krishna. Right? And then there are vibhavs. Vibhavs means the stimulant of love. Now, what stimulates our love? What makes us love Krishna? One is called alambana. One is called udipa. So alambana means Krishna himself. He stimulates our love. Right? When they see Krishna, they feel he is my friend. He's my sakha. Hey, sakhe. There's my friend. And the other way of stimulating love is called udipa. Udipa means things related to Krishna. So they're walking along through the forest, they see his footprints, and say, there's my friend's footprints. He must be close by. And then they start looking for him. Right? Or his flute, which is mentioned in this verse. The flute is an udipa. It means it stimulates Krishna, it stimulates love for Krishna. They're in the forest and they hear, through the forest on the wind, the sound of Krishna's flute. And say, Krishna, where is he? He must be close by. It stimulates their love. So this is called a vibhav. Now, how many types of flutes does he have? Three main categories. And then amongst the categories, then he has subcategories of flutes. He's a very far out guy. Anyone else would just have one flute or two, but Krishna has three, and then even amongst the three, then he has other branches. So what are the three flutes called? Three. Yeah, Venu, Vamshi, and Murali. So he has the three types of flutes. So we'll read a little bit. This is from Nectar of Devotion. So this stimulates the love of the, it's called Udipan, which means the flute stimulates the love of the devotees. So it says Krishna's running around playing his flute. Why does he play his flute? Because it just makes everyone more attracted to him. As far as his flute is concerned, it is said that the vibration of this wonderful instrument was able to break the meditation of the greatest sages. Krishna was thus challenging Cupid by advertising his transcendental glories all over the world. So he plays his flute in such a way, it breaks your meditation.
When it describes, because in chapter 21, which we'll get to in about three or four chapters, what's chapter 21 called? No, that's 29 to 33. It's a very, very important chapter. It's called Venu Gita. What does that mean? Yeah. Gita means?
Song.
Yeah. What does Venu? Song of the foot. So chapter 21 is called Venu Gita, the song of the foot. So it says, well, here in that chapter, and that chapter is very deep. That chapter is purely about conjugal ras with Krishna. It's the first chapter in the Bhagavatam which really just focuses on that rasa, which we haven't heard about primarily yet. But it just talks about Krishna and the gopis. So it says the gopis are like great sages. The gopis are just fixed in meditation. Right? You can't move their minds. But when Krishna plays their flute, even though they try their hardest to ignore it, they can't. Because they're in a precarious situation. Right? They're young girls and a young boy, and they can't show that they are attracted to them. It's not accepted in the culture. In that culture, I mean, it's different these days. Boys and girls just do everything together. But back in those days, there was no interaction. Right? And when Krishna played the flute, they tried their best to ignore that flute, but they couldn't. So it says here that Krishna just breaks everyone's gravity. They know that Krishna's playing the flute. No, I don't want to listen to it. Right? But it just drives them crazy. Right? And then he plays at night time. You'll hear in the Venu Gita, and especially in the Rasa Leela in chapter 20, when he plays at night time, he plays in such a way that he steals their hearts. Right? He plays in such a way where he calls their names through the flute. And he says, come. Right? And they go crazy. Right? And they jump out their windows and they run through the forest in the dark to get to him. And then when they all get there, then he says, why did you come? He says, who invited you here? He said, you're supposed to be at home. What are you doing here? I didn't call you. Like that. And they become angry. Right? And they look down the ground, and with their toes, they make circles in the sand. Like that. And they're very angry. And they look at him, and they're not very happy. And they say, you called us. Right? He just wants to get the reaction from them. So he's thinking like that. There are three kinds of flute used by Krishna. One is called Venu, one is called Murali, and the third is called Vamshi. Venu is very small, not more than six inches long, with six holes for whistling. What type of a flute is that? 6 inches long, how big is that? Yeah, so about as big as that book, right? Roughly, like that. So Krishna's got one flute. What's it called?
Venu.
So it's only as big as that. So it means he holds in one hand, he plays, and it's very high-pitched. He plays that, he uses that to call the cows during the daytime. He plays like very high-pitched to call the cows. But then the gopis, they hear it, and it steals their minds. That's what we'll hear about in chapter 21. Yeah. And the next flute is called? Murali is about 18 inches long, with a hole at the end and four holes on the body of the flute. This kind of flute produces a very enchanting sound. Okay. So 18 inches long, which is how long? So like 1 foot, so it's like that. Probably maybe about that long. Is that 18 inches? Okay, it's about that long. Okay. So it's quite a long flute, so he plays that one with two hands. So it's called Murali, different type of flute. Murali Dara means one who holds the Murali. The Vamshi flute is about 15 inches long with 9 holes on its body.
Krishna used to play on these three flutes occasionally when they were needed. Krishna has a longer vamshi, which is called Mahananda or Sammohini, which is still longer. When it is still longer, it is called Akashini. When it is even longer, it is called Anandini. Anandini flute is very pleasing to the cowherd boys and is technically called Vamshuli. These flutes were sometimes bedecked with jewels. Sometimes they were made of marble and sometimes of hollow bamboo. When the flute is made of jewels, it is called Sammohini. When made of gold, it is called Akarshini. So he has long flutes, very long, and they're very deep. And they're the ones he uses at night time to call the gopis. They're a very mystical sound. When you hear the sound of these flutes, sometimes you can get recordings on the retreats we do with Burujan Prabhu and Satchidanand Swami. Sometimes Burujan Prabhu and Satchidanand Swami, they play tapes or CDs with the sound of these flutes, the vamshi, the very deep mystical flute, which you play very slowly and softly. And when the gopis hear that, they go mad. It's very romantic. It calls the gopis to come and be with Krishna. So Krishna has these flutes. This is called Udipan. Udipan means, just by hearing the sound of something related to Krishna, it attracts the devotee. It's called Vibhav. There's the science of devotion. So what else is an Udipan? What else stimulates love towards Krishna? It says here, Krishna's buffalo horn. His leg bells. His conch shell, his footprints, his pastimes, the Tulsi plant, and Krishna's devotees. So there's many things. And it also says special days like Janmashtami, Baladev Purnima, Julan Yatra, all these festivals which are coming, they're Udipan. They're things related to Krishna which stimulate our love for Krishna. So why did Prabhupada give us all these things? Why did he give us Julan Yatra and Baladev Purnim and Jamashtami? He gave us all these things because it stimulates our love for Krishna. Ekadashi is meant to stimulate your love for Krishna. Prabhupada said on Ekadashi, the devotees stay up all night and they don't do anything except hearing and chanting. Prabhupada says that in Nectar Devotion. My Guru Maharaj, Tamogrish Maharaj, used to do that. Stay up all night and just chant, hear and chant. Like that. And Prabhupada says we should do that. Fast. And stay up all night and just hear and chant about Krishna. It stimulates your love for Krishna. That's called Udipan. So we hear about Krishna's flute. So that is stimulating a love for Krishna. Any points?
No question. When Krishna gives attention to his cowherd boyfriends, you know, like when he's having lunch with them and he's having lunch with all of them, what's that considered? Because that gives them pleasure. When he gives them attention or a sideways glance to the
gopis. Yeah, that's alambana. Alambana means that's him himself. When he himself is there, then that is the cause of love.
That's not just how he looks. It's also how he acts.
Yeah, it's both. It's considered udipan and alambana. So it's him, but it's also something which stimulates love for him. The way he dresses. He's there every day, but he dresses differently every day. And he drives everyone mad. Everyone's just waiting to see, how's he going to dress today? And he puts the flower, when he's going out of Nandagram, and if the gopis are on that side, he puts the flower on that side. So they can all see the flower. And then he looks at them out of the corner of his eyes. And if they're on that side, he puts the flower on that side, and he looks out that side. So he's always thinking of how to please the devotees. And they all go mad. You know, how is he going to dress today? What's he going to do? Is he wearing the garland that I made him? Everyone's just absorbed in him all the time, all the time, all the time. That's when we see the deities in the temple, we're meant to be like that. When you see the deities, you're meant to be, there's Krishna. What does he look like today? How is he dressed today? Who dressed him? What is he wearing? Over the years, I've given a lot of jewelry to Radharani. Radharani, I always give her jewelry. No. So a lot of the jewelry she wears over the years is the jewelry I've given her. So sometimes I come in the temple and she's wearing something that I gave her many years ago. And then she wears it in a different place or a particular place where the pujari has put it on that particular day. And it's like a sign. So devotees are feeling like that. They come to see Krishna every day. What's he wearing? Is he wearing what that garland that I made? Or is he wearing that piece of jewelry that I gave to him? Or is he like that? So it's a way of Krishna stimulating our love. So when you see the deities, it should be like that. Sometimes we see devotees go into the temple. They walk in. They hardly even look at the deities. I've seen devotees come in, offer obeisances to Gaudiya and Tyre, kind of look at them. Offer obeisances to Radha Balabha, look at them. Offer obeisances to Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, look at them. Get Charanamrita. That's why you really came. Right? Have Charanamrita and then just walk out. But we're not meant to be like that. We're meant to absorb ourselves in the form of the deity. That's what's being described here. The devotees are just, what's Krishna going to look like today? How is he dressed? They're excited. So we should be like that when we see the deity. We should absorb ourselves in the form of the deity. Become attracted, attached to the deities. That's why the deities are here. To train us so that we once again become attached to the original form of Krishna. Decorating themselves with newly grown leaves, along with peacock feathers, garlands, clusters of flower buds, and colored minerals, Balaram, Krishna, and their cowherd friends danced, wrestled, and sang. So it says that Krishna prefers all of the natural ornaments which come from Vrindavan, the minerals from the rocks. They make from the rocks, they take different colors and they make paste and then they make gopi dots or gopa dots. And the flowers and the leaves which they decorate themselves with. He prefers that to all the gold and the jewels. Mother Yashoda dressed him with the gold and the jewels, but he prefers all the natural ornaments. He just likes flowers and berries and leaves. That's how he likes to dress himself. And colored pigments. They decorate each other. They draw dots on each other like that. Special patterns. As Krishna danced, some of the boys accompanied him by singing and others by playing flutes, hand cymbals and buffalo horns, while still others praised his dancing. So Krishna is known as Nataraj. Nataraj means the Lord of the Dance. He's the greatest of the dancers. We saw that in the previous chapters when he danced on Kaliya. It said the demigods were watching, and after a while they just gave up. They were trying to dance along with Krishna, and he was watching, and he would dance, and then they would dance, and he would dance like this, and they would follow him. They were all trying to do what he was doing. But after some time, they said, we're demigods, we're Gandharvas. Gandharvas are the best dancers. They said, we can't dance like you. So it says here that Krishna, he sings, and he's dancing, they clap. They're just in the forest, just boys, playing and dancing and clapping and singing. But they're the most expert dancers and singers in the creation. So it's like a concert. Wherever Krishna goes through the forest, it's the most sublime and wonderful and attractive music and dancing. Which one are we on? O king, demigods disguise themselves as members of the cowherd community and, just as dramatic dancers praise another dancer, worship Krishna and Balaram, who were also appearing as cowherd boys. So the demigods came as well. Because if they came as demigods, everyone would respect them. So they didn't want to come as demigods, so they all became cowherd boys. And they stayed on the outside of the cowherd boy circle just so that they could also associate with Krishna. The only way you can get into Vrindavan, you have to become a cowherd boy or a cowherd girl. If you stay like this, in the form you have now, you can't get into Vrindavan. Because you'll look very strange if you go to Vrindavan. With your beanie and your belt and tie. What is that? Thai, what is this thing? Kanamara always says that. A Thai, what's a Thai? What is it? Why do we hang a bit of cloth around here? Who made that up? It's not even there in the Vedic system. You don't hear anyone wearing a tie. But we all wear this piece of cloth around here. If you wear that, then you're very, like, prestigious. I have my tie.
And they're not cheap.
Yeah, not cheap. You've got to pay a lot of money. Just have a bit of cloth right through. Because Kanama Khan, so he walks through the airports. He's always traveling around the world. And he walks through the airport. Sometimes people pick on him. They say, oh, you wear your dress, oh, like that. He turns around and goes, oh, you wear your tie, oh. You know, he's carrying his dunda. And they say, oh, what's that for? You're going fishing. You know, he's got his dunda like that. And he turns around and he says, oh, what's this? What's this thing? What are you wearing? What's this thing? Oh, it's your tie. Oh, what do you do with that? Oh. Some crazy thing. So if you want to go to the spiritual world, then you have to become like everyone in the spiritual world. You can't go in this body. So demigods, they can't go in the demigod body. They have to become cowherd boys. So if we want to go to the spiritual world, we have to give up our attachment to this form. Krishna and Balaram played with their cowherd boyfriends by whirling about, leaping, hurling, slapping and fighting. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram would pull the hair on the boys' heads. So, as boys. You do this when you're a kid? Yeah, when you're a kid, you're always pushing your friends. Well, even now I do it. You push your friends. Yeah, me and Manigriva, we do this all the time at the farm. Yeah, we're walking together and I just push him. He pushes me and then, you know, like that. Boys like to do like that. So Krishna and Balaram always pushing their friends and like that, grabbing each other's hair. It says because sometimes, you know, when you do a ceremony, you shave up. So sometimes the boys do a ceremony and they shave and they've just got a seeker. So Krishna will walk behind and just grab the seeker as he's walking past, just like, you know, pull the seeker thing. Like that. So they're all just pushing and shoving. The boys like that. I see the boys in Vrindavan, I go to Vrindavan, like the kids walking along the street, they're all holding hands. Yeah, people don't do that here in the West. Yeah, everyone walks down the street, you have to walk by yourself. But in Vrindavan or in India, people hold hands. The boys hold hands and like that. And you see all the boys in Vrindavan, they're walking, and then they slap each other across the back of the head. And, you know, walking down the street, just like slap each other. That's what Krishna and Balaram do. They're just like, have fun. Hey. While the other boys were dancing, O King, Krishna and Balaram would sometimes accompany them with songs and instruments, instrumental music, and sometimes the two lords would praise the boys, saying, very good, very good. Sometimes the cowherd boys would play with bilva and kumbha fruits, and sometimes with handfuls of amalaka fruits. At other times they would play the games of trying to touch one another or trying to identify somebody while one is blindfolded, and sometimes they would imitate animals and birds. They're just playing, just having fun. In the spiritual world, no one works. In the material world, you have to work. If you don't work, it all stops. In the spiritual world, there is no work. You just run through the forest playing games all day. And at the end of the day, then God, he says, would you like something to eat? It's all free. Have as much as you want. You know, here we have to pay. Now you go to Gopal's, you have to pay. But up there, no one pays. What do you want to eat today? Hey, take as much as you want. No problem. You want to take rest? Take rest. Sit down, take rest. Whatever you want. Just have fun. Just play all day. You don't even have to do anything. There's no rent. But still we're attached to Albert Park. We've got to work like a dog. Just to maintain your box.
At least you can do rest and food.
What's that?
There's a place to rest and food.
Yeah. So you just recover for the next day and then go back and do it all again. Yeah. In this way, which one are we on?
previous one.
14 or
15?
15. They would sometimes jump around like frogs, sometimes play various jokes, sometimes ride in swings, and sometimes imitate monarchs. In this way, Krishna and Balaram played all sorts of well-known games as they wandered among the rivers, hills, valleys, bushes, trees, and lakes of Vrindavan. Shri Vrindavan Dham. So the whole point of reading this is simply to become attached to Vrindavan. If you didn't become attached to Vrindavan, then read it again. And keep reading it until you become attached. See you next week. Hare Krishna.